and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson. Just a note at the top of the show today, tomorrow we will be talking all hour about the leaked draft U.S. Supreme Court opinion that would strike down Roe v. Wade if it becomes the court's final and official ruling. Stephen is going to talk with University of Michigan law professor and former U.S. attorney Barbara McQuaid, and we're going to take lots of your calls and comments during the show tomorrow. We really hope that you'll join us for that conversation because we know so many people in our community are thinking and talking about and processing their feelings as they relate to the big news this week. And again, that is tomorrow, same time, same place. We're going to want to hear from you then. But first, Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson has been on the front lines of the fight to uphold democracy and voting rights in the face of growing right-wing extremism that threatens those institutions here in the United States. That work recently won her a John F. Kennedy Profile in Courage Award. She's one of just a few recipients of that award this year, and get this, the others include Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Congresswoman Liz Cheney. Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson joins me now to talk about the award and the state of American democracy as we head toward the 2022 midterm. Secretary Benson, always great to have you here on Detroit Today.
Good morning, Jake. Thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations on that award. Before we get to that, and also the elections that happened yesterday, which if a lot of people may have blinked and missed that, but there's some big news there. But I did want to talk about the big news from the Supreme Court, this draft opinion that was leaked on Roe v. Wade that would overturn Roe v. Wade. I know abortion rights don't really fall under the purview of your official position, but as a leader here in Michigan, a legal expert, someone who has spoken out in favor of reproductive rights in the past. How are you personally reacting to that news?
Well, as a former law dean as well, I look at the draft opinion with a lot of concern because the basis is on overturning the constitutional right to privacy, which is the same basis used in other cases to enable marriage equality and several other freedoms that our country has now adopted to. It's also the same reasoning that in other cases has found voting to be a fundamental right under the Constitution. And so I think there's certainly the direct impact of what this draft or ultimate final opinion may bring for the country and for women and for people everywhere. But there's a warning signal as well hidden in the words that other long-held rights or protections or freedoms, up to and including the fundamental right to vote, may also be in jeopardy based on the court's reasoning in this draft opinion. So that has me very concerned, and I think really also underscores the fact that elections matter, and that in every election provides an opportunity for citizens, regardless of your position, perspective, or where you live, to make sure your voices are heard. And I think we'll certainly be seeing this have an impact on elections this year. And I think we're already seeing that based on a lot of the engagement and high turnout we saw yesterday.
That's exactly where I wanted to go next on this. As you mentioned, a lot of people are interpreting Justice Alito's opinion in ways that would seem to erode other things that we do see as fundamental rights here in America, including that right to vote. It sounds like you do believe that there is a danger there. I'm curious what you think of how, what is the next step? How do you, you've been talking a lot about ways to uphold these institutions, to defend them. What is the course of action if this does become the final ruling from the Supreme Court?
Well, I think like the same trend we've seen in voting rights for the past several years with opinions coming out of the Supreme Court that have weakened federal protections for the right to vote, the battle or the opportunity, depending on how you look at it, now shifts to the states and now shifts to voters here in Michigan and in states around the country and our state constitution and protections there. And so I think you'll see a lot of conversations or a lot of movement around enshrining protections in our state constitution, which voters can do by referendum or by petition in our state. As well as in other states. I think to me, the bottom line, and I always look for inspiration and opportunity in every setback and challenge, is for us to remember that in a democracy, people have the power. And people have the ultimate authority to determine who governs us and who determine and hold accountable those who make decisions that affect us all. And so, you know, elections this year, elections in the future provide that opportunity and provide the opportunity for citizens to express their positions on these and other controversial issues and support leaders and referendums and petitions that reflect those values and those and protect those freedoms.
So barring any Supreme Court opinion that could have, again, these sort of sweeping implications for voting rights, what do you see as some of the other big threats to democracy and voting rights in 2022, where we sit right now and sort of as we're seeing elections start to get underway here?
Well, there's no question that democracy is on the ballot this year. As the, you know, really the Kennedy Library made clear in the award you mentioned earlier and really highlighting those of us who've been working to ensure that that no matter where someone lives or who they vote for, they have a voice and it's heard and a vote that's counted. So to me, protecting our freedom to vote, our right to elect who governs us is a critical issue this year, and voters will have an opportunity to choose across the country and here in Michigan who will be overseeing our elections in the future. And we know, I think to me, the biggest challenges or the biggest issues apart from that are engagement, making sure voters, I mean, a lot of folks are exhausted, frankly, you know, for a lot of reasons, a lot of the uncertainty, a lot of the challenges we've dealt with as a state, as a country over the last 5 or 6 years. And a lot of that is related to not just the divisiveness and the toxic nature of politics right now, but also the misinformation that is, in my view, an extension of this national coordinated, well-funded attack on our democracy being carried out. But people who are lying about the accuracy and integrity of our elections or have stated publicly they wouldn't follow the rule of law to certify election results they don't agree with has also, I think, created a great challenge for us in the democracy world, but also, you know, has created a lot of weariness among citizens who are tired of the noise and just want to know that our state and our elections are going to be run well and with integrity and want to know how to find truth in the midst of all of this noise. So as the chief election officer of the state, I've taken a lot of steps to make sure people have access to trusted information, including revamping our website to find information about audits and other data points that we've conducted that verify and prove the accuracy and integrity of our elections. But that battle is an ongoing one, and it's one that we need voters to be engaged with and serve as truth tellers as well, spreading truthful information so that we can ensure everyone is an informed and engaged citizen this year and beyond.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. Really appreciate you joining us today. I'm talking with Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. We're talking about what her work is looking like in 2022 as we approach the midterms in terms of making sure that our institutions for voting and democracy are intact and strong as we head into this critical election. We're talking about the critical elections that happened yesterday here in Michigan. And we also are talking a little bit about the news from the Supreme Court this week as well. We want to hear from you. What questions do you have for Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson? What do you think are the biggest threats to democracy in 2022? And what do you think should be done to uphold those institutions? As usual, the number on the phones is 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. You can also send us your comments and questions on Twitter using the hashtag Detroit Today. We'll try to work you into the conversation that way as well. And Secretary Benson, you and other elections officials across the state, Republicans, Democrats alike, have been urging lawmakers to pass election reforms for months now. You know, we saw local clerks send a letter to lawmakers and other state leaders urging them, saying, we need help. We need this now. We can't wait on this to do things like pre-process ballots, do more for early voting, as you mentioned, do more audits of elections and so forth. Do you have any hope at this point now that we've already gone past the May election here in Michigan that we'll see changes to Michigan law to help clerks and other elections workers do their jobs in August and November?
I think the best predictor of the future is the past. And we've been asking for these changes, as you mentioned, really since I took office, for example, testifying in May of 2019 that we, before the state legislature, that we need the ability to begin processing and validating absentee ballots as they come in, or at least prior to election day, like in Ohio and Florida and many other states. And we still haven't seen movement there. But that doesn't mean we stop pushing. And I think the clerk stepping in and really being engaged in a way that that can move the needle is a significant change. And in my view, we've got, you know, long-term, short-term needs for the elections. For this fall, we really need three things: an increase and sustained source of funding, as clerks continue to need resources to support their work. We need to protect our election officials and increase protections and ramifications for those who threaten our election officials, because so many clerks and those standing on the front lines of protecting democracy face continuous threats to their safety and to their work. And three, we need to be able to have policies in place that enable us to process and tabulate and report results of elections as soon as possible after the polls close. And that's why we consistently ask for the ability, as we have in other states seen, to pre-process absentee ballots, because more voters are sending their ballots in early. And right now, clerks can't begin tabulating or processing those ballots until 7 a.m. on election day, which puts us at a disadvantage in getting those unofficial results out at a efficient speed after the polls close.
And in terms of what you're hearing from lawmakers, anyone like that, has there been any change recently in their reaction or attitudes toward this? And if these don't go into place, what are the ramifications?
There has not. I've not seen a change. There's always an openness and a willingness for discussions, which I appreciate. At this point, we need some action. There have been bills introduced that we'd love to see some movement on. And again, we've seen this legislature move quite quickly when it wants to do something. And so I hope that the sense of urgency that comes with elections coming up, in which many of them are on the ballot, will impact that, because we all deserve to have smooth and put our best foot forward to have smooth elections this year. That said, you know, we managed, myself and our 1,600 clerks, the highest turnout election in our state's history with enormous national scrutiny without these changes in place in 2020. It wasn't easy, but we did it, and we did it, you know, with integrity and proudly, with accurate results that stood over hundreds of audits. So we've done it before, we'll do it again, but there's no reason why we can't also see partnership and support from our state legislature to essentially continue to make improvements for our elections so that we can, you know, essentially do better for all of our citizens.
Again, the number on the lines is 313-577-1019. I'm talking with Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, and we'd like to get you involved in the conversation today as well. Again, that's 313-577-1019. Right now, we'd like to go to Michael in Grosse Pointe. Michael, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, and good morning to the former dean of my law school.
Michael, what would you like to say today?
My question is as follows. I live in the city of Grosse Pointe. My driver's license, which is my picture identification for voting, identifies my residence as Grosse Pointe Park, which is the official address for my zip code. I'm concerned that a very aggressive election poll watcher might challenge my right to vote if they see my driver's license and say, you're not eligible to vote in the city of Grosse Pointe. You have to live in Grosse Pointe Park. And I'm wondering if the Secretary of State is aware of this concern and if she has any thoughts of remedying it. It doesn't necessarily have to be a change in everybody's driver's license, but it might be as simple as issuing every election officer an official letter saying the driver's license is not necessarily the identification of a polling place.
Michael, I really appreciate this question. It's a good one. Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, what's your reaction to what Michael is asking here?
Yes, thank you, Michael, and I'm glad to hear you're an alum of Wayne State Law School. The specific question, I think first what you point to is what we've seen as a growing challenge in election administration, where we want to have transparency and invite observers and challengers, as is allowed and permitted under our law, to observe the processes. And what has happened is a lot of times those individuals interfere, sometimes in contrary to what they're even permitted to do under the law, with our elections processes in a way that causes this type of confusion and concern for voters. And so I think first and foremost, and we have been working with the legislature to find ways to do this effectively, we need to better train or provide training or information ahead of time for challengers and observers that when they see things, they understand what the law is and what they're seeing. And that, you know, could help curb, I think, a lot of the misinformation that emerges out of elections processes and leads to confusion among voters and challenges for our clerks. And so this specific example is a point, you know, case in point on that. And you know, we're certainly going to work to make sure our clerks, our observers, everyone knows the rules and the laws this year and beyond. And we also, there's a state hotline if you have specific problems, but we'll, on election day as you encounter, you also have the option to vote absentee and get your ballot mailed to you and then return it back, which also could perhaps avoid some of the concerns that you have in terms of showing up in person on election day. But the bottom line is you have a right to vote in your, in the address where you're registered to vote, and that is verifiable on our website, michigan.gov/elections. And you should, you know, come armed with that information and prepared to not be discouraged from voting if someone with misinformation tries to step in the way or interfere with the process.
Yeah, Michael, thanks again for the call. I really appreciate you bringing that in, and hopefully other people are helped out by some of that answer as well. Secretary Benson, as I mentioned earlier, there were elections yesterday here in Michigan. The May elections don't often get quite as much attention as the primaries in August or the general election in November. But talk about how voting went yesterday, and did you see anything that might tell us about sort of the more high-profile elections later in the year and how they might go?
Well, we did see a lot of people vote prior to Election Day. So we're continuing to see, you know, even in the waning days of the pandemic, citizens continue to take advantage of their right under our state constitution to vote from home. And so a significant number of citizens who participated yesterday voted prior to Election Day. And a lot of the data is that, you know, in terms of who and where is still, we're still gathering because it was a local election and a lot of that is reported at the county level. But I think the bottom line is we also see hundreds of citizens continue to register and vote on Election Day itself, even in a local election, which also underscores the importance of our work to make it easier than ever before to register to vote in our state. I think, you know, we've seen, and I'm sure others have reported, some, you know, changes in election districts and special elections and House districts that I think, you know, could indicate some trends for November, but it's really too early to know on that. I think that the most encouraging thing is we're seeing a lot of people participate. Citizens continue to exercise their right to vote from home, and citizens continue to, if they're eligible, register on Election Day and ensure that they're able to participate. So all good trends, and I'm optimistic that we'll have, you know, continue to have smooth, high turnout elections this year as we did in 2020 and in this local election. But, you know, again, every election is an opportunity for voters to show us what they're thinking and what they want, and our job is to make sure that wherever they are, wherever they live, their voice is heard and their vote counts.
And speaking of the August primary coming up in a few months, I'm curious what you make of the Republican candidates who are facing challenges to their signatures that they've submitted to appear on the primary ballot in August. Democrats and even some fellow Republicans who are opponents of these folks are accusing them of submitting forged signatures. Those candidates include former Detroit Police Chief James Craig, businessman Perry Johnson, conservative commenter Tudor Dixon. These are some of the front runners or apparent front runners in the race. I'm curious what happens if those signatures are proven to be fraudulent.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, first, you know, we're just at the beginning of the process. The Bureau of Elections has received the challenges and are reviewing them. And you know, there have been several. These are, you know, the individuals who work at the Bureau of Elections have been there for years. They are professionals, and they're going to continue this work with integrity as professionals. But I think the second thing is, you know, if some of the allegations of fraud turn out to be accurate, there certainly will need to be ramifications for that. And because I have no tolerance for those who would misuse or abuse the elections process at all, and this in particular. So we could expect referrals to law enforcement and the Attorney General if indeed there are potential things that evidence suggests we should refer. And beyond that, we'll allow the facts to drive us forward and the investigation to play out, or the response to the challenges to play out.
And so I mean, again, this is hypothetical, like you said. At this point, we're at the beginning of the process, so we shouldn't assume that any of these that these are, you know, challenges are expected in these cases. So no conclusions to be made yet. But again, fraudulent signatures, especially if you see lots of them, are there criminal implications there?
Potentially. I mean, again, it depends on the nature of the violation. But I think the bottom line is we're going to take any evidence. Any credible evidence of illegal wrongdoing happening in the petition process, including fraud and forgery, very seriously. And we'll refer it to the appropriate law enforcement officials to ensure there's accountability and you know, also continue to work with legislators in the hopes of strengthening the protections for the petition process to ensure that we can have this process. But this aspect of our elections, the petitioning of candidates to get on the ballot, go not just smoothly, but, you know, with an eye towards protecting the integrity of the process. So if we need additional protections, additional ramifications through changes in the law, we'll explore that too. But, you know, at this point, we're just going to see, you know, the process will play itself out. But we do take very seriously any violations of election law, and we will refer them to law enforcement if they're found.
Let's go to Cheryl in Ann Arbor. Cheryl, what would you like to say today?
I didn't quite hear that. Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I actually had two questions, and hopefully Secretary Benson can address both of them. The first is just a clarification on how we are supposed to sign any of the petitions that are being circulated. Is it with our voting address, our mailing address? What's the right way? And the second question is, pertaining to the budget, which is now being negotiated up in Lansing, we know that one of the things that doesn't get a lot of money is election funding and election funding locally in our counties. How do we get money transferred into that? What's happening up in Lansing right now to get money for training, to get money for increased pay? Really appreciate the answer to their questions. Thank you, Cheryl, for that.
Yeah, and Secretary Benson is someone who's watched the budget process up close as a reporter. Cheryl's not lying on the last point there about not always getting a lot of money for the elections processes. What are the answers to her questions first about the correct way to sign that petitions and which address to use?
Your voter registration address is your address with the state. It's your address on your state or license if you have one. And if you have any questions about that, you can contact your local clerk, but that is the address you should use. Secondly, as I was discussing earlier, ensuring we have a sustained source of funding for our elections is a top priority for me. We've continuously asked both leaders in the federal government and in our state government to take seriously the need to protect. If they say they're going to protect the security of our elections, and if they say they want to stand for election integrity, then fund our work to ensure that we have all the resources that we need to protect our elections. And I would say, seeing the federal government act, the president has asked for $10 billion over the next several years for election funding is very encouraging. But I would, from our state legislature standpoint, we haven't seen a lot of movement. And I would genuinely like to understand why those claiming to want secure elections consistently reject requests for funding and other resources that would increase election security, while also attacking the partnerships and collaborations that help us maintain the integrity of our elections. And hope springs eternal that we'll see movement. We're going to continue pushing for it, as I know the clerks will as well. And supporting our clerks however we can, as the increase to running elections and the cost of running elections does continue to increase with every cycle.
Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, really appreciate you taking the time to join us today on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me, Jake. I appreciate it, and appreciate all the work you guys do. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. All right, coming up, we'll talk about a new podcast that looks at the life of former Red Wing defenseman Vladimir Konstantinov, the catastrophic limo crash that ended his career, and why he might lose his at-home care due to Michigan's auto insurance law. I'll talk with the hosts of Collision Course, the Konstantinov story, next on Detroit Today.